This is Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley on your radio at AM 590, online at AM590ESPNradio.com, and on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa to open AM 590 Omaha. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
This is hard to watch. It really is. And I know the fans are having difficulty with it. It's hard to watch for any Nebraska fan, as the hopes were so high for this season. And it's just a mystery in so many regards. Now, you can understand what happened when Isaac Copeland, you know, his absence from the team has had a dramatic effect. But, you know, Nebraska's problems began well before his season-ending injury. Missed free throw Lindo, and that's going to be it as the PBA crowd empties out. And the Huskers head to the locker room, losing tonight as the horn sounds. Final score, Maryland 60, Nebraska 45.
It's Ken Pavelka last night right here on AM 590 and across the Husker Sports Network. Final call of what was, Nick, for my money, one of the most brutal performances I have ever seen out of a collegiate basketball team. I mean, 45 points at home.
Was that the horn on the season right there?
Yeah, well, it may as well have been. Nebraska shot just abysmally last night, to collectively for the game,
21%.
21.1%, 4 of 17 from 3, 17 of 28 from the charity stripe. I mean, it's just, it's one thing to get beat by a good team and look good along the way and draw some positives out of the game, which I felt like there was a stretch kind of in the middle, Nick, where we were watching Nebraska play, and you could see, okay, well, they're losing, but there's still some bright spots there. I mean, you could still feel like that fire was still burning kind of underneath. Man, last night, I don't know. I don't know that I've ever seen a team play that poorly. I mean, and it's the same things, right? I mean, no offensive flow. They're missing at the rim. I mean, constantly. How many dunks, layups, point blankers did they miss again last night? It's just, it's to the point now where it's kind of inexplicable. I mean, yep. It's one thing to lose Copeland. I get all that. And hey, we knew that this team had depth problems, and they got more bench points last night because they decided to start Thor as opposed to Tom Allen. So Tom Allen came in off the bench and scored 7 points. So had 10 total bench points. We talked about yesterday, which that's progress, but, you know, subbing out one of your starters for a bench role probably doesn't really count, I guess. It's just, like, I don't know. I don't even know where do you begin trying to break this thing down. It's just, again, the thing we said yesterday was, even if they don't win, you want to see some semblance of, yeah, this team is starting to figure it out. They've maybe turned a corner. Mentally, they, you know, are still engaged, or they feel like they're getting closer. After last night, Nick, they feel farther away than they ever have.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's gotten worse each and every time out, and I don't have the answer, and judging by Tim Miles' post-game comments, I'm not sure that he or any of the players have the answer either at this point.
Well, and what Kent said in the final call is spot on as far as a team that it's easy if you are not following Nebraska basketball this season, you could look at it and say, well, clearly this team has been rocked because of the loss of Isaac Copeland. Well, as Kent said, no, the issues started well before that injury took place. So, I mean, they had Isaac Copeland, and what really kind of started this just head-scratching funk that they're in Rutgers. You know, Copeland was there. Copeland was a part of that. I mean, you saw even – go back to their last win, which it feels like forever ago when they beat Penn State. I mean, that was – sort of a mail-it-in type performance, too. I mean, thank goodness it was at Pinnacle Bank Arena, because if that was in State College, that might have been a different result. That might have been when Penn State would have gotten their first conference win, not against Northwestern this week. So even then, you could kind of see things going in a different direction. You know, it's just so interesting, too, when you saw that final number, the field goal percentage, 21%, the lowest ever shot at Pinnacle Bank Arena. I mean, you think about some of the real abysmal offenses that have been under the guidance of Tim Miles without, yeah, you know, some proven shooters like this team still does have, even without Copeland. I mean, you let that sink in for a moment. And, you know, I said on Monday, after they had lost to Illinois, where I'm just pretty much, I've run out of adjectives. I've run out of any way to describe what we're currently witnessing with this basketball program. I've ran out of ways to describe it. And then you see what happens last night and you think, my goodness, because I was kind of in that boat on Monday where I just can't imagine it getting any worse. And then you go home against a Maryland team that, I mean, they're young, they're big, they're talented. I mean, there's some good things with Maryland, but they made Maryland look like a Final Four team, and Maryland is so far from that, it's ridiculous. And to shoot at that clip at home, a place where they have gained so much confidence, a place where has always kind of been their safety net, a place that has always kind of represented, hey, if there is a place to turn things around, this is it, because our fans absolutely love us. I mean, you just watch that. And, I mean, KP's right. I mean, it's easy for people to kind of from afar look at it and say, well, clearly it's because of the Copeland injury. In fact, I had somebody kind of get on me last night because I tweeted out, I said, you knew that this offense would take a hit with the loss of Copeland, but, I mean, this is far worse than anybody anticipated. And somebody said, well, come on, you know, they were bad before Copeland. You know, you're smarter than that. I'm like, no.
Not this bad. They weren't this bad.
You're not reading the context of my tweet. I'm saying, yes, even with Copeland gone, they are far worse than what they should be. So I'm essentially agreeing with your take in a way, but I'm saying at least you could sit there and say, this shouldn't last that long, because how long can they be down with having that many good players on the floor? Well, now you don't have Copeland, so now you start to try to look at the end. You try to find some kind of light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm sorry, it just does not exist
well,
right now.
Well, and Nick, the thing, too, is I know there's a lot of people out there that are kind of, I don't want to say, you know, riding high right now, but, you know, say, well, I mean, we all knew from the beginning this was going to happen. Based on what? I mean, you watch this team in the non-conference portion of their schedule, Nick.
Right.
This was a tournament team. It really was. Those
are the miles detractors.
And that's fine. If you've hated this team from the beginning, then that's fine. But don't tell me that you watched this team in the non-conference and expected this to happen. Because the Copeland injury is a part of it, Nick, but you're right. KP's right. Something broke along the way here. And for my money, nothing embodies that more than what is going on with Glenn Watson right now.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's tough to watch.
He was miserable on the road at Illinois. Last night, he played 38 minutes and 37 seconds out of an available 40 minutes. He had as many points as I did in this game last night, a zero. He had 2 rebounds and 1 assist.
And he only had a few more shots than you put up yesterday, too.
It was 0 for 10. Yeah. 0 for 10 and 0 points.
Wait, wasn't it at one point, I think under either the 8-minute or 4-minute media, and TJ, maybe you can help us out on this one too. I think Isaiah Roby was the only Husker who had made 2 field goals.
He's shaking his head.
That is correct.
I'm sorry, guys. That's awful. I don't care. I don't care who you're missing. You're missing Isaac Copeland. You have one player who has made more than 1 field goal.
Well, and the reason
that is unreal.
The reason it's so tough is because, Nick, I mean, Watson's been starting for 4 years. I mean, he's a 4-year starter. This is it for him. He's coming down the home stretch, and you can tell. I mean, it's written all over his face that it's just there is something between the ears that is just not coming together for him. You watch him play. I mean, he does not appear to be injured, I don't think. I mean, maybe there's something that he's fighting. It just appears to be mental at this point, and he just can't seem to get it out of his own way. They're not going down for him. And, you know, we can sit here and we can blast Glenn Watson, we can blast Tim Miles, we can, you know, talk about, you know, Tom Allen not being aggressive, or James Palmer, I mean, being just pedestrian, I guess, in a game like this. I mean, Roby played great. You kind of wonder, like, where's this been? Again, consistently the entire year. But, Nick, these guys it's killing them. I mean, when you listen to them talk after the game, it is absolutely eating them alive that they are playing this bad. This is not a us against the world kind of thing. Everybody hates us. This is not a, you know, we just have decided we're not going to go out and try hard. I mean, it is literally killing these guys that they are not playing well, and they just don't have any. I mean, listen to Coach Miles last night. This is him talking after the game about where they are right now.
I hate it. I just feel so bad for our fans. Just feel awful. And I feel really awful for our players, because I told them a long time ago, you know, I'm not going to let you fail. And it hurts. It's hard.
And the thing is, I don't doubt anything he's saying. I don't sit there and think that, you know, and I tweeted out that clip last night, and I had a couple people saying this is pathetic. Now he's trying to get people to feel sorry for him. And, you know, this is the easiest thing to do. And we're in this platform, you and I, where we can sit here, we can dissect a game, and we can talk about team successes, we can talk about team's failures or something in between, and we can give our best analysts and how we see it, just from our own view, from our own opinion. And it's easy to go down the critical route to where the more you start talking about it, the more you start thinking, oh my gosh, you know, where's the buy-in? You know, do these guys care? I mean, you hear that, and that's a coach. I get it. Tim Miles make a lot of money. Tim Miles is somebody that is expected to do a job. And hey, we're all judged on our performance in every job out there. Whether you're a teacher, whatever you are, if you do a poor job and if you don't meet expectations, guess what? You get replaced. I understand that. But I also think we tend to forget that as frustrated as the coaches, as frustrated as the fans are, as frustrated as even the people who cover this team, and how overcritical we can get, the players and the coaches have that times 20. I mean, they feel it more than anything, and especially this season, because going back to something you brought up, Joe, watching this team early on, especially in November and December, you got a really good feeling of, man, remember the Nebraska team, even the ones that were, quote, talented, would take on some of those powder puff teams, and they would sort of lower their level of play, and sometimes they'd get nipped in the heels on that one too. That was one thing I really liked what I've seen from this team. Not the fact that they go on the road and beat Clemson, and you know they had a couple good wins here and there. It was the fact that even when they were playing some of the worst teams on their schedule, they were not lowering their style of play. They were playing at a high level, and I thought that was a good sign going forward. I think there were a lot of reasons to look at that team in November and December. If you are looking at it with an absolutely open mind, you have absolutely no predetermination whatsoever, or any kind of preconceived notions based on because you don't like Tim Miles or whatever. If you watch that with an open mind, there's no way you couldn't come away and say, yeah, I think this team is pretty good. I think this team could be very good. Once this thing hit, boy, it's been kind of tough to watch, because I think, yes, there's always been the history of this team, of Tim Miles' teams not playing very good down the stretch, other than last year. I thought they did a pretty good job last year, other than the Big Ten tournament. But you've seen that. And so, yeah, there's that historical element to it. But just based on this team alone, to see what they're going through right now, I have no question that Isaiah Roby, Glenn Watson, James Palmer, everybody wearing a uniform, and especially the coaches, are really feeling this. Like Tim Miles' emotion, that was genuine last night. So I don't want to hear this, oh, now he's trying to show emotion because he wants people to feel sorry for him and stuff. No, he really does feel like he let this group down. These players feel like they let you, the fans, down. But more than anything, as a team. I mean, this is I can't imagine it. I said Monday, I didn't think it could get any worse. Last night was worse.
Yeah, and I don't know what the way out is at this point. To be completely honest with you, Nick, this team looks like they need a vacation for about a week where everybody goes and sits on a beach for a while and, you know, has a few drinks and puts their feet in the water and then comes back and decides to play out the rest of the season, because at this point, it just looks like they are 100% mm-hmm. mentally spent. And they just can't. They're grasping for anything that they can and just can't seem to find the answer. Get to some of your calls coming up. Headlines as well. Jacob Padilla going to join us bottom of the hour. HailVarsity.com on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow. Now Nebraska will be back in action on Saturday at Mackey Arena. They'll be taking on Purdue out in West Lafayette. That is a 7:30 primetime matchup. We'll have the coverage starting at 6:30 for you right here on your home for Husker Sports AM 590. TJ.
Let me get the bag. Can we take Pete really quick?
Pete's yeah, let's get to Pete.
Sorry, Pete. How's it going, man?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
You know, it's kind of tough to watch. When you can't hit three throws, there's something wrong. And I guess I'm a Miles fan, but, you know, one of the best things he could probably do is go out and hire Jack Stark to come in and help with the psychological as a team, because it's got to be 70% mental. So
yeah,
I just
at least.
Make that comment.
Yeah, Pete, appreciate it.
It's kind of like, and we saw a little of this with Glenn last year, where it's like the mental equivalent of the yips, like the basketball's version of the yips when, all of a sudden, I mean, everything that's releasing from your hand in any kind of form of a shot is just nowhere near it. And I mean, to the point that you just have no confidence. And yeah, Jack Stark, one of the great Nebraska sports psychologists too. I don't know. I mean, that was kind of the theme last night after the game, listening to Tim Miles talk. I mean, a lot of people are sort of commenting on that emotional clip that you just heard a little bit ago, but this is a guy that's running out of answers.
He's
pushing it, trying to push every button he can.
Nick, I try and remove a lot of the emotion from these kind of things, and I wouldn't say like I didn't grow up a fan of any of the, you know, three local teams, but I just feel like hoops wise in this state, I really thought Nebraska was going to be good this year.
Yeah, I did too.
Really, and I want to see them in the tournament because I mean, for the players, for Miles, for just the fans.
Well, remember,
you want to see them in the show.
Remember our first year on the air back in the 2013, the 2014 season.
Great season.
When they were playing the same day, they were in the same, in fact, same side of the bracket with Creighton. If they would have won, and Creighton wins, they play each other in the round of 32. Remember how that day was? Remember how exciting it was? An early game. I think they played like at 11. Oh, my gosh. The place that we were broadcasting was, I mean, absolutely jam-packed. Every bar in the Omaha area was packed. Everybody was so excited to see Nebraska back in the NCAA tournament. I mean, yeah, everybody, I think, has got kind of used to seeing Creighton in the NCAA tournament. But having Nebraska in there as well, it added so much. And I'll say, everywhere that I was that weekend, or at least that day, there was a lot more red in the bars than there was blue. People were pumped for it, man. Yeah. And I thought this year for sure it was going to happen again.
And you looked at this team, Nick. I mean, you could make the case that up until Jan 1, I mean, they looked like a team that could win a couple games in the mm-hmm. NCAA tournament. They could be a second weekend team. And you go back to that season, right, that you just referenced. I mean, think about Creighton basketball the last few years, too.
Yeah.
They have gotten to the dance, to their credit, but it feels like they have gotten halfway through the year, and then all of a sudden they have something massive mm-hmm. happen to them, like, and the rug gets pulled out from underneath them. Like that year that Mo Watson got hurt.
That was
team was ticketed for
Martin Crumple last year.
Huge things. Martin Crumple, and then this year just everybody's hurt for Creighton. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if they're going to be able to limp their way in at this
point. All of a sudden, Tyshawn Alexander to the mix. So it sounds like he'll be back next week, but still, I mean, it's like, my goodness, when it rains, it pours.
And we're going to talk to Darren Hansen later on in the show, Nick. And I mean, literally, at this point, Creighton has just lost too many of these close games, I feel like, that it's going to bite him in the ass, unfortunately. Like, they could have had Villanova last night. They could have beat Marquette at home. They needed one of those to kind of tip their way to put that real signature conference win on their resume. I mean, I'm pulling hard for the Mavs at this point, Nick. But I mean, realistically, even if they win the Summit League tournament and get in, they're what, a 15 seed probably?
15, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a great story if they manage to do it, and I'll be thrilled for them, and I'll cheer as hard as what I possibly can, but your odds of upsetting a two are slim, not non-existent.
Sure.
I mean, you know, certainly is possible.
But that's the big difference, though. Nebraska and Creighton, if they get in there, everybody's hoping, you know, for a win and thinking that they can win. UNO gets there. People are just excited to see on the NCAA tournament broadcast who, you know, let's say they're playing Kentucky versus Omaha.
Yeah.
I mean, just to see them play, they could lose by 50 in the first round. And just to see them, that would be a huge turning point for that basketball program compared to what Nebraska and Creighton, well, especially Nebraska, trying to win that first game and the kind of season that this should have been. I get it. I get the fans' frustration. I get it. It's just, it's unbelievable. It really is. I don't know what else to say.
TJ's got the headlines for us.
TJ,
make us happy, man, because we're getting naughty.
I actually got to keep this going because I found this unreal stat, and we should get to Dave here in a second. Okay, but this comes from Matt Waite. He is a professor at Nebraska. Listen to this tweet. How out of whack was last night's Huskers basketball game?
Out of whack.
If you take a team that shoots 44% at home on the season and simulate 57 shots 10,000 times, they should make around 25. The number of field goals Nebraska made last night was 12. Less than once. So if you saw what you saw last night, extremely unlikely to happen again in the next 550 seasons of home games.
And that's why.
That's unbelievable.
Going into the game.
Unbelievable.
You see that Nebraska's a point and a half favorite is because you just look at the numbers. Like the law of averages says they can't string that many awful games together in a row. But that's nuts. It is.
Yeah.
That's nuts, but it's just where they're at, Nick. And to me, if there is a road out of this, okay, if there is a way for Nebraska, I want to talk about making the NCAA tournament. If there's a way for them to win like three games the rest of the season, Glenn Watson has to find a way to pull himself out of whatever funk he is in.
Yeah.
Because, Nick, you cannot get 0 points, 1 assist, 2 rebounds out of your 4-year starting point guard who plays 38 minutes last night.
Well, and the three games, this is where we can really point to the Isaac Copeland injury. Okay, I think we can all agree, all three of us can agree, that the signs, the troubling signs, were very much existent even before Copeland went down, right? I think we can all agree on that.
Absolutely. You could see, no doubt.
You could see some things there. Where we've seen this Glenn Watson all of a sudden kind of reverting back to last year, where all of a sudden his confidence is consistently shook, that has occurred after the Copeland injury. So I don't know if he feels like now he's got the weight of the world on him, kind of like he did last year, where he felt he had that until he saw he had proven scores around him. But I don't know what it is. I mean, that's just a guess that all of a sudden since Copeland's been injured, yeah, there's been some games that he's been off here and there. But, I mean, last night, just his last three games since Copeland's been gone, it's been bad. It's been really bad.
And I want the guy to be successful, Nick. I'm not trying to kill the kid.
How could you not?
He was picking up shots after the game last night.
Yeah, I'm not trying to dump on the guy. You want to see him be successful.
The kid wants it.
And think about all the guys that have left. Think about all the players that have left, transferred, quit, hung it up, walked away, Walt Pitchford out. I mean, you know, whatever. Think about all the guys that have done that. Glenn Watson is like the one dude left standing.
He's
from
stuck
all
with
of that.
It.
And that guy, in over the course of his career, has had ups and downs, peaks and valleys, Nick. But, I mean, if they won a single postseason game, I mean, besides the Big Ten tournament, I mean, they haven't won an NIT game in a while, have they? Certainly didn't win an NIT game last year.
They beat Creighton in an NIT game.
Yeah, but that was before Glenn Watson, two or three, four?
I mean, that was Collier years.
Yeah.
I want so bad, and I think everybody wants to see him be successful, and to watch him right now is the most painful thing. It's like if you're a basketball fan, it's like the most painful thing to watch because you can just tell the guy just is his
confidence is shot.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 0 for his last 15 on threes.
It's the equivalent for his last 30-some from the field.
I mean, it's ridiculously horrible.
Guys, it's the equivalent of trying to watch Chuck Knobloch throw the ball to first base or try to watch Rick Ankiel hit the strike zone.
I mean, where you know.
Or John Lester throwing to first base.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know they're fighting it mentally. Like, they're just fighting it mentally. And that's where I have no problem saying, I know these guys want it. I know these guys want to do better for each other, and they want to be able to put on a show for the fans, but for whatever reason, collectively, it ain't happening. I mean, nobody could sit there and say, oh, these guys just have given up. They don't care. They don't want it. No, you can't say that. That couldn't be further from the truth. And Glenn Watson is a perfect example of it, and TJ, I think, paints the perfect example of that. I mean, the guy is sitting there after everybody has left the arena, and he is shooting. He is trying to shoot himself out of this. I mean, think about how many times we've ever had a bad outing on the golf course where we were all of a sudden feeling really, really good. You have a bad outing, and all of a sudden, immediately the next day, I mean, all of a sudden your swing just goes to crap. This has happened to me so many times. And all of a sudden, you find yourself right on the driving range because you got to fix it. You got to fix it right away because you will not put yourself through that. Like, that's what Glenn Watt's trying to do. He's trying to find his swing again. Like, it's gut-wrenching. It just is. It's tough. It's tough to watch.
Let's get Dave in here real quick. Dave, how are you today?
Okay, guys. Hey, you know, that's true what you said about Glenn. He just, there's nobody to take the pressure off him. I mean, you could see after on the Illinois game when he just got up off the bench and went down and stood at by the tunnel. But, you know, guys, maybe this is far-fetched, but, you know, when Omaha World Herald and Lincoln Journal Star had this big article about how, you know, Copeland and Palmer were coming back and this team could be a four seed. Well, they've been riding that emotional high for so long, and sometimes you're going to come down from it. And after the Michigan State game, you could go back and watch that game. Those players were emotionally spent, and something happened after that game where teams at the top of the key double-teamed Palmer, where he couldn't drive to the basket, and now everybody's copied that. Mm-hmm. And that's just what I've seen, and just the problem started after that. But you guys, thanks for taking my call. Thank you.
You know, Dave, you bring something up, and this is interesting because, I mean, look at how they have continued to kind of regress since that game. Because, you know, someone had also tweeted at me of, oh, well, Michigan State is completely, like, throttled Nebraska. No, they didn't. That was a good game. That was a game where I walked away saying, you know what? I would be encouraged if I'm a Nebraska fan because they didn't look like they were severely outmatched in that game. Like, I thought they defended pretty well, and just a couple shots didn't go down. But I didn't think there was any major red flags there. But remember what Tim Miles said. is that this loss cannot beat them twice. You know, they cannot let Michigan State beat them twice. They lose to Rutgers, and we are all kind of dismissing, well, you know, they just played a different kind of game. I don't think the Michigan State game was kind of looming over them. Now, all of a sudden, you think about this. I mean, did Michigan State break their season? I mean, yes, the Copeland injury aside, but did Michigan State all of a sudden just kind of put them in a path that all of a sudden they can't get out of?
Well, if you want to look at the kind of the roller coaster up and down, Nick, I think losing to Maryland the first time on the road shook them pretty good because they were up in that game for a good portion of it. Yep. They were competitive, and then Maryland put the run on them late and ended up beating them. I can't remember if they had a game in between or not, but then they went to Indiana and just blasted them. I mean,
wire to wire.
So it's kind of like, well, boy, that was a tough one to lose, but man, all of a sudden you're back high again, and then you get that talk about, you know, we did this.
Yeah.
We did it. And, hey, they beat Michigan State. They're in the field. They're, you know, playing for like a 4 or 5 seed at that point. Mm-hmm. All these things.
Indiana had not lost at home until that night.
Yeah, and then the wind just completely comes out of the sails, and they've never recovered.
Yeah,
I mean, they just have
never.
That
ended up being more of the aberration, because think of it. The Minnesota and Maryland loss, they failed to close out a team.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, all right, that's something to keep your eye on. And I remember everybody was kind of just getting all panicky, saying, oh, my gosh, the season's over. The season's over. And you and I both sat here on the radio station, like, oh, come on, it's way too early. Like, I refuse to write Nebraska basketball off on January 4th. Like, I'm not going to do that. And then you see them play Indiana, and I'm thinking, okay, there's my validation. They just needed to figure out how to close a team off. You know, get to a lead, have that lead, be able to sustain that, and then withstand another run from your opposition, and then close them out. They did that in Indiana at a tough place to play, and I'm thinking, okay, see, there you go. That's all they needed. Boy, I think a lot of people, maybe they knew something I didn't. Maybe they did.
No, look, I just sent you guys this graph, and people can view it on Twitter. Husker Hoop Central tweeted out, it appears the Michigan State game is what really broke them, because ever since then, because according to game score and however you measure that, but that takes into effect like how well you play an entire game.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Ever since that Michigan State game, their game scores have just been absolutely awful. Where you compare them to the first games of the year, they're just completely dominant. But ever since Michigan State, it's just been it appears it's what that broke them.
Thanks a lot.
That 20-game winning streak with home wins, and then Michigan State having their own 20-game conference winning streak all coming to a head that night. They don't shoot well, but only lose by 4, and it's just, man.
You know what? We got Mike St. James, Michigan State, Sparty Mike,
yeah,
in the building. We all need to go into his office and toilet paper his office, because Michigan State is not just ruined. They've ruined Nebraska's season.
It's too bad. It truly is unfortunate, Nick, but I'm trying to remain as optimistic as what I can, because I truly do want to see Nebraska turn this thing around and at least be able to put some sort of a semblance to a, you know, a cherry on top of the season. But right now it just feels like a giant turd sandwich,
yeah,
to be completely honest with you.
You need something to base it off of right now. And right now there's not anything.
All right. We're going to get to Jacob Padilla of Hail Varsity next. Covers hoops for them. Also a Creighton alum. We'll get some of his thoughts on just overall maybe where Creighton is at this point of the season. It's AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow. All right, let's continue the discussion. Nebraska losing last night to Maryland in a game that just wasn't pretty. There's no putting any lipstick on that pig. They fall 60-45, shoot a Pinnacle Bank Arena low 21%. Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com, covering Husker Hoops. Jacob, it was brought up last segment by a caller, and I think if you look at certain numbers, you could definitely entertain this thought that since that Michigan State game, even with Isaac Copeland in, boy, did they sort of jostle this team into a funk that it just looks like, at least at the immediate future, it's unrecoverable. I mean, do you look at that game against Michigan State where they played pretty competitive, but then all of a sudden what has happened since, that maybe we can blame Michigan State for wrecking this season?
Yeah, it kind of does look like that's when the spiral kind of really started in earnest. But at the same time, like, if that really was the case, then what kind of mental state was the team in to begin with? What kind of trust did they have in what they were doing? All that kind of stuff, because a competitive loss against arguably the best team in your conference, that should not be something that derails your entire season. That should fire you up. Hey, we were this close to getting this win. That means we should be able to hang with anybody else, should be able to beat anybody else in the conference. And I don't know what it says about the team's mental state that instead of coming away like that, they came away like, I don't even know what the deal is now. They just have no confidence in themselves and their teammates, apparently in their coaches. I don't know what it is. They're playing hard still.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, defensively they played well enough last night, but they just have no answers whatsoever on offense, and I don't know why that's the case.
Yeah, and you want to look at the personification of that, Jacob. I mean, Glenn Watson last night was just, I mean, it was abysmal. I mean, what do you think is going on with him right now? Is this all mental? Is there a physical aspect to it? What's the story in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm in the process of going back through and kind of charting Watson's games and pulling some screen caps for a story that I'm working on today. And yeah, that is as big of a problem as anything else on the team, is the way Watson's playing right now. It's not just the fact that he can't make shots right now, it's that he's not doing anything. He's not creating anything for anybody else. He's not even creating good looks for himself. I'm going back watching, he's missing his teammates so much. He's taking bad shots when he's got open guys or could have had plenty of time on the shot clock to try to create something better. It just seems like he's so in his own head right now. And I really don't know. I mean, outside of shots somehow falling, like he was out on the court after the game. I don't know how long he was, 'cause I left, but, he was out there shooting with the managers after the game when, we got done with all the post game stuff. So, it's not for a lack of trying, but he's just in such a funk right now. And, Nebraska isn't really doing anything, I don't think, to help him get out of it.
Jacob, the one part of this game we have not discussed, and this was the controversial play with Bruno Fernando and the Tim Miles technical. I know there was some confusion. And Andy Katz said during the BTN post game that he was kind of saying shame on the officials, but also shame on the local media that were there because they did not request any kind of report, a pool report from the officials to where they could describe why they did not review what looked like it could be a intentional stepping on Tanner Borchardt. You were there. Do you know what took place and if there was a request to get any further explanation from the officials on that one?
Well, yeah, the request was made, but apparently from Nebraska, the request should have been made during the game and not after, because the officials were already leaving the building.
Gotcha.
But like I don't know what Andy Katz is talking about. Like I rewatched the play a bunch of times. Like there's nothing there. He didn't stomp on Borchardt. His foot kind of landed on him when he came down after the dunk, and he held his foot up so he didn't step on him. And then he kind of stomped down going if there's anything, you maybe could have called the taunting for stepping over him.
Yeah.
But Borchardt tried to take the charge because Roby said their explanation was that it was a flop. Borchardt went down, but it's because Fernando kind of banged into him a couple of times. And a lot of times you can't really kind of lower your shoulder and slam into a guy in the post. So that's what Borchardt was trying to do. But I guess the official decided it wasn't enough of a slam.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he went down, his foot kind of got tangled up in Borchardt's legs. So that's kind of, I think, where the stomp stepped through over there, because he's ripping his foot free real demonstratively and then running back down the court. So that, I don't know what Cass is talking about. There's nothing to review there. Nothing happened, really. So like I said, the biggest thing there is maybe stepping over him instead of stepping around him.
Yeah,
you could have said something, but like, yeah, that's blown way out of proportion. There was nothing there.
Well, Jacob, this weekend Nebraska does not have an easy road trip. They're gonna have to go to West Lafayette to take on Purdue, who is scorching hot at this point. If there is anything in this game, any reason for optimism whatsoever, what would you point to?
That's a good question.
Come on, Jacob.
We're glass half full people
dig
here, man.
Deep,
give us
man.
Something.
Dig deep.
Well, I guess the sign for optimism would be that Purdue isn't quite the same team that it has been the last couple of years. They don't have the same kind of size. Matt Harms is huge, but he's more of a defensive player than he is offensive. He's not a guy that's going to dominate you in the post. So it's not like they've got some of the guys they've had in the past with Isaac Haas and Caleb Swanigan and guys like that. So it's a kind of a different kind of Purdue team. It's basically Carson Edwards and then everybody else. And maybe if you can put together a good defensive performance on Edwards, kind of switch things up, try a couple different guys on him, mixing up with some Lang, some quicker guys or whatever, and keep him in check, maybe they'll have a chance to compete. But nothing really matters until they can figure out this offense, because you look at this last game and it's getting worse and worse. And I don't know what you try, because they can't do anything right. They're shooting terribly from three, shooting terribly. I mean, they're shooting average from the free throw line, even when they get there.
Yeah.
And then at the rim, they can't even score at the rim. They were 6 of 20 on dunks and layups, according to Nebraska's shot chart. 6 of 20. So if you can't even score at the rim, I don't know what you're supposed to do. So until they can find a way to actually get the ball to go through the rim, I don't think matchups, I don't think who they're playing really matters. It comes down to Nebraska and if they can fix themselves.
Jacob, lastly, there was clearly some frustration during the game from Tim Miles. We talked about that technical, but also the emotion afterwards, where he kind of said he feels terrible for the fans. He feels even more, it feels worse for the players, because he talked about how he would not allow them to fail. Do you think Tim Miles is just, I mean, this is all kind of starting to come to a head for him as well, kind of realizing, you know, where this thing is going?
I think it kind of has to. I mean, I don't know how you could see it any other way at this point. Like I said, even at that last game, it's like, the nice thing is we still got all these opportunities, but then you come back with one of those opportunities and you're getting worse instead of better. So if you still haven't been able to figure things out, so if you don't have the answer now, when is the answer going to come to you? And I mean, they're running out of time very fast here. So it's going to be tough to even have themselves on the bubble at the end, let alone make the tournament here, if things don't immediately flip around. And I'm not quite sure I see that happening.
Jacob Bedillo, once again with HailVarsity.com, covering Husker hoops. Jacob, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You got it, man. All right, we'll get to the Borkart situation up at the top of the hour. But do want to touch briefly on Creighton coming up next, as they also had a heartbreaker last night. Boy, a weird game for the Jays. Even if you just go by the numbers, the low scoring, low number of three-point attempts, no Tyshawn Alexander in the game, which is not what we were expecting. A little bit to dig into with the Jays as well here on AM 590.
Yes, beautiful.
Well, for as brutal as it was for Nebraska last night, obviously we spent a little bit of time talking about already, a weird game for Creighton last night on the road, Nick. I mean, going to Villanova is a tough trip for anyone. And then all of a sudden, you find out at game time that Tyshawn Alexander has a knee issue and is not going to play for Creighton, who has been easily their best player this year. I mean, best scorer for sure. Connor Cashaw, Damian Jefferson, both made their return last night.
Was,
in fact, Connor Cashaw played a lot last night,
too. You wonder if Tyshawn plays. You got to like Creighton's chances in this game, because they still have a chance to win it with 2 seconds to go.
They did, but boy, what a weird game. I mean, the number of three-point attempts for Creighton, now correct me if I'm wrong, was it 13 or 17?
Creighton at 17, yeah.
17 attempts, which if you follow Creighton basketball, that's got to be a season low.
Yeah.
I mean, normally they're heaving up at least 30, if not 35 in a game. The fact that this game went to OT and Villanova won it scoring in the 60s. If you were to tell Creighton that you could hold Villanova under 70 points last night, I think they would have been ecstatic, because they would have thought for sure they would win.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this was like a defensive struggle. It appeared by the box score, and that is not Creighton basketball. And it's just the one thing that stands out to me, Nick, and full disclosure, I didn't have a chance to watch the game because, God, I watched Nebraska play, and I was just depressed and just wanted to go and, you know, sit in my chair with all the lights off in the room and cry for a little bit. But they have let a lot of these close ones against the elite teams in the Big East get by them this year. I mean, they lost in overtime at home to Marquette. They lose to Villanova on the road like this. They've lost a couple of other real close ball games. I just get the sense, if they're going to have a realistic shot, they're going to have to find a way to win one of these games, and there's just not that many chances left against those two particular ball clubs.
Well, I just think of the way that Villanova shot last night. It was bad. I mean, credit some of this for, I think, just the overall different defensive personnel that Villanova had prepared for and what they actually saw with the absence of Tyshawn Alexander. And sometimes that can actually be a little bit of a wrinkle thrown into it that kind of takes the other team off guard. And I think Villanova, they just shot poorly. I mean, they really did. I mean, this is a team that they launched 34 three-pointers and they hit 10 of them. So, I mean, you're looking at a 29% clip beyond the arc. This isn't the same kind of offensively gifted team as they were last year in their national championship run. But you just think about catching Villanova on an off night. I mean, the way that they were last night. I mean, boy, I mean, Phil Booth was very average last night. It was weird to see them. And you just think of a team that can't really get a break when it comes to the injury front. I feel very, very confident that if Tyshawn Alexander plays, that he's the difference in this game for Creighton. I mean, that's what you need in a game like that where, okay, you got Villanova. I mean, the one thing you're hoping for is that we play good. You know, if you're Creighton, we play good, solid brand of basketball, and we need Villanova to be a little bit off of their game. Well, they were really off their game last night, but unfortunately, you don't have your best player in the lineup, and you're also trying to work around Marcus Zegarowski also being off. I mean, it was good that they did have Cash on. They did have Damian Jefferson in action. But, man, I just think of having a guy like Tyshawn Alexander, what he has done over these last few games. I mean, really, this last month.
He's a 10-point-a-night guy, at least, minimum.
At least. And knowing that they still had a chance to win the game with, like, 8 seconds to go, they make a defensive stop, they get the stop that they need, and you get a couple cracks at it there down the stretch, and you can't get it. Boy, you just thought once that game went into overtime, that was the opportunity that they had. And once it went into overtime, it was probably going to tilt back the other way, and unfortunately it did.
Tough one for them, and it just feels like a lot of missed opportunities this year for Creighton. But still, you look where they're at, Nick, and they're hanging in there at least. I mean, had an opportunity to pull off a huge upset on the road last night, and I just, man, I hate to bring it all back to Nebraska, but man, just, that was a tough one to watch last night. All right, speaking of that particular game, one thing we will spend a few minutes on to lead off the hour, what happened between Bruno Fernando and Tanner Borkart, certainly, you know, riled up some controversy in some people's minds. We'll give our thoughts on it next, and then TJ does have headlines. Talk some Iowa Hawkeye hoops in the next hour of the show as well here on AM 590.
ESPN Tomorrow.